Hey everyone, Josh here. Quick question for you. Do you like coffee? Even more important question, do you like fresh coffee? Coffee that's roasted to order and doesn't taste like the bottom of your kitchen oven? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then you need to head over to MaquanoCoffee.com and get yourself some of the best coffee there is to get. Whether you like the light roast or the dark roast, or you're feeling a little whimsical and you want to get that sample pack, Maquano Coffee Roasters has everything you need. And just when you thought this couldn't get any sweeter, make sure to use the promo code REFORMATORY to get 20% off all bagged coffee. Do yourself a favor and stop drinking bad coffee, because you know what? Life's too short for that. Head on over to MaquanoCoffee.com and use the promo code REFORMATORY to get 20% off all bagged coffee. You will not regret it. Thanks, and now on to the show.
What do you got for me?
What's wrong with you people?
I got nothing for you.
What's wrong with you?
Benediction right there. That was so good.
What's going on, everyone, and welcome to The Reformatory, the podcast for the local church and by the local church, and we are your local churchmen. My name is Josh, and as always, my right-hand man, via digital media, the captain, Jack Barry.
Yes.
Jack, my friend, it is good to see you. Mm-hmm. Happy, as we record this, happy St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, yes.
Top of the morning to you.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Yes.
Gosh.
Yeah, we could do the entire episode in Irish accents. Tell me about your local church wars, little lad. Tell me all about them. I want to hear about
them. That's not the Trinity, Patrick.
That's blasphemy.
That's heresy, Patrick.
Oh, Patrick. Welcome to the Reformatory. I feel like that's how I should have started it. Oh, well,
oh
that's
man.
Okay.
Yeah.
If this was releasing on St. Patrick's Day, it would have made more sense.
Yeah.
But it's very true. Days later. Anyway, yeah. Let's spare the listeners any more of that. But Jack, my friend, it's good to see you as always. Mm-hmm. How are you?
Good. Yeah, doing good. Well.
Excellent.
It's nice and somewhat sunny, but also windy here. Mm-hmm. In Western Washington, at least in Tacoma it is. So
yep.
I don't know if it's like that up there in the Cedro Woolley area.
It is. It went from last night torrential downpour to hail to sunny. And that's just how it is in the PNW. Welcome, people.
It did that here in Tacoma later last week. Mm-hmm. It hailed a couple different times.
Yeah.
It was so weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. Interesting stuff.
We've done Irish accents. We've talked about the weather.
Old
men. Time for our local church check-in. Lord's Day for me was great. It was long. We had our final new members class this last Lord's Day, which was good. Just went over basically what membership looks like in our particular church, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of answered questions there revolving around those. And next up are pastoral interviews, right? We'll have people will schedule those with myself and one of the other elders, and we'll get together with them and hear their testimonies and their confirmation of baptism, and as good Reformed Baptists as we are, and move forward with if all that checks out and the desire is there and there's no other issues to work through, move forward with voting them into membership. So it's gonna be exciting. It's been a really awesome couple weeks, but just slammed. Like I was dragging today. I was funny. I was driving. I was on a delivery or something like that. I forget what I was doing, but I was talking to my wife over the phone, and I'm like, man, I don't understand why I'm so tired today. It's not really like I did anything over the weekend. And she's like, are you kidding? I'm like, no. Like, what did I? She's like, you had a meeting Saturday night that went until like 10.
Oh my gosh.
She said you had a full Sunday morning, to which you had liturgy responsibilities that you were up early on Sunday prepping for. Mm-hmm. And then you had members meeting right after the Lord's Day service that went mm-hmm. for 2.5 hours. So she's like, whew. If that's a nothing weekend, then we need to reevaluate. I'm yeah. Like, yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair. It was actually pretty busy. So, but I'm taking my wife away for a little trip next weekend for our anniversary.
Nice.
Looking forward to that. And nice. Get away for a couple days, and that's going to be good. But Jack, over to you. How are you doing, my friend? How was your Lord's Day?
Yeah, it was pretty good. We got some not so great news. I told Josh about this. We'll talk about it on the podluck a little bit more.
Yeah.
Just kind of working through that. And then let's see, what did I do? I served on security.
Nice.
So usually I serve once a month as a security team lead, and then serve communion. What else did we do? And then, okay, so we have it's staggered. We have like every other week in the evening on Sundays, on Lord's mm-hmm. Day Sundays evenings, we do Bible study. So it's like a potluck or bring your own dinner. And then we're going through Genesis.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And so we went through this huge chunk of scripture. We were like focused in like really turtle speed, and then like we just zoomed through like,
dude, turtle speed through Genesis is wild. Like that's, I mean, hey, it's good, but that you're gonna be in that book a while, my friend.
Well, we just zoomed through chapters 3-11 on Sunday. So
3-11?
Yeah. Yeah.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, we were going over a lot. So
wow. Okay. Okay. Yeah. You made up for it there. Good yeah, gracious.
But honestly, like if you look at it, it kind of like you can look at chapters 3-11 as like the fallout of like the initial like falling away from the Lord in how sin creeps in mm-hmm. and just destroys, and then basically the fallout of sin is basically the rest all the way up to 11. And then you see even Babel as well too. And then you get into Abraham. Yeah.
Well, and that's true. And I guess I kind of forgot like chapters 6-10. Yeah. At least 6-10 is like the story of Noah. So mm-hmm. that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and then you hit the Tower of Babel. So, okay, yeah. I heard 3-11. I'm like, goodness. But, yeah, it really is just, it's all about Noah. So,
I mean, that and just the fallout from, you know, Adam and Eve.
Right.
You know, sinning against God. What does that look like? What is, we were actually looking at a lot of stuff. Like, how is God's posture towards humans in those first chapters?
Right.
And it's interesting how God interacts with humans that way of like, not a lot of providing for necessarily, but a lot of protecting,
Sure.
Yep. because of the curses that he doles out, in mm-hmm. chapter 3. So, but then also like an interesting like way in which the garden is coming back up, even in Noah's story, like he's kind of like, there's like this decreation in the flood, and then there's a recreation after Noah.
Yeah.
And stuff along those lines. And then we went through like the Table of Nations and talked about that and got all nerdy into it that way.
Yeah.
If there's anything specific. Also like pretty interesting to go over those people again and how Noah curses Ham,
right.
But he blesses Japheth.
Right.
And his other brother, I can't remember his name now. Oh my gosh.
Ham, Japheth, and,
Shem.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Shem.
So it's really cool to kind of like trace those, cause Ham's like lineage is like Canaanites. Basically all the enemies of Israel are like Ham's descendants. Yeah. And like Japheth has like a bunch of, I think it's like Coastal People or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think it's Shem has basically the descendants that'll become the Israelites.
Israel. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Abraham.
Interesting stuff.
So anyway,
yeah,
super interesting stuff, especially yeah. like looking at it from 30,000 foot perspective
right.
sometimes, and like bigger, broader themes that are going on that are kind of carrying you through. Yeah. So yeah. yeah, but it's really fun to have that when you're like in fellowship with one another. And
oh, for sure. Yeah. 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 It was funny. Like one of the things that came up in our new members class is one of the individuals there asked us,
mm-hmm.
You know, do we go through Old Testament books just like we do New Testament books in preaching? Right. And obviously the answer is yes, of course, course. Right. But it brought up a really interesting discussion and a great learning or teaching opportunity of talking about the importance of interpreting and viewing the Old Testament through the lens of the new. Right. Mm-hmm. And not the other way around, because you see those promises and those covenants pointing towards something. Right. And if you don't have a correct understanding of where those covenants are coming from, right, then mm-hmm. you're not going to interpret them or view them or read them, where those covenants are going, like what they are pointing to, you're not going to read them correctly, right? And obviously it brings up the discussion between covenantal theology and dispensationalism mm-hmm. and yeah. how dispensationalism, you know, obviously there's faithful brothers within the dispensational understanding of scripture, but we would disagree mm-hmm. on how they interpret scripture, because it really is somewhat of an opposite, and that there is more so an interpretation of the New Testament through the Old, right? Mm-hmm. And you end up getting, in my opinion, and any, you know, Reformed person, and I'm talking the historical definition of Reformed, would agree that that's an issue, right? Because mm-hmm. we view the covenants through the lens of the new, because they are all pointing, they're pointing to Christ, right? And they're pointing to those things. So it was a really interesting discussion, and just reminded me of just how, I guess just the importance of shepherding individuals without making assumptions as to like where they are spiritually,
mm-hmm.
right? Because I think for some people that understanding is just like, oh yeah, no, that's just exactly what you do, right? But that's new for some people, and that's awesome, right? Like something that I love seeing is the wheels turning and the lights going on. I was like, oh, that's why we do it this way, right? Whether it be talking about the covenants, whether it be about baptism, like why, you know, us Reformed Baptists have a very, what some would consider narrow understanding and practice of valid baptism, right? Mm. It's not that we call, you know, our Presbyterian brothers, you know, we're not calling them in sin for doing what they're doing, although some would, and there definitely are some Reformed Presbyterians that would call us Baptists in sin for our understanding, and I'm not willing to take it that far, but there is a difference, right? And it's important to, I think, something that I've really, and I don't know about you, but something that I've really been, I think the Lord's been really pointing out in my mind and in my heart through different circumstances, is that yes, we're called to have obviously grace in differences. Of course you need to, but especially when it comes to personal conviction and when it comes to leading a church, you have to land somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Like, you really do. Like when it comes down to your practice and what you're going to teach, what you're going to believe, it is important that we land somewhere. And I think that there's, and I found in my own heart almost a aversion to wanting to land somewhere definitive on secondary issues, Right? Because obviously we need to know where we're at on the primaries, of course. Nobody's arguing that. But I think some people take a approach towards secondary issues, and I want to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah.
That it's just kind of because it's secondary, because it's something that we can agree to disagree on, because it's not a salvific issue, I really don't need to have a firm opinion on it. And I can just kind of not really care about it, if that makes sense, right? Hmm. And I think what I've found for me personally is that there are some things that I have, the Lord's kind of revealed to me through this, the last couple of years, that I, whether intentionally or unintentionally, kind of did that with, where it's not like I didn't have an opinion or I wouldn't have like conviction on it, but I just kind of like, it's really not that big of a deal. And I think there's a difference, Jack, between, and this is kind of what I want to hear your thoughts on. I think there's a difference between being gracious in differences versus apathetic toward those particular doctrines. Does that make sense? I think like we should be one and not the other.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I think that, you know, I think that's pretty much a good summation of, I guess, what I kind of look to. I look to secondary issues as secondary issues. I think it's hard sometimes when people take the secondary or the tertiary issues and make them gospel issues.
100%. And I think that because I've been in a lot of situations and environments where that was the case, it created almost a pendulum effect that, well, I'm really just not going to make it a deal at all. You know, when it's still doctrinal issues, they're still important to talk about, and you got to land somewhere. But
no, it's true.
The graciousness that you have in those differences is more so than you would in the primaries.
Yeah. And I would say even language regarding those differences, too. So I think it's in the council or the canons of Dort when it addresses the Arminians. Mm-hmm. And talks about them. I think it says that they are in error. Mm-hmm. I don't think now whoever's listening who's real reformed, I guess.
Reformed TM.
Yeah, yeah. the real ones can check me on that. But I think that the language that they use in the canons of Dort is we think that they are in error. Mm-hmm. I think there is a big difference when saying, I think that you are in error with that versus I think you are a heretic, or I think that you're not faithful to the gospel, or XYZ. Right.
Sure.
So I think language has an important part to play in how you talk about secondary issues. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not going to call people who practice infant baptism heretics. I would use language like, I think they're in error.
Yes.
And I think that's like very somewhat gracious, but also showing that I disagree with them.
Right. Right. And and that's okay. Right. Yeah. Like I think again, this is why the 1689 was written, was to show one, our love and our unity with our Presbyterian brothers and the things that we agree with, but also that we're particular in our distinctions.
Sure.
Right. And yeah. I think it's a lost art being able to do both.
Yeah. And I think too, when the 1689 was ratified in 1689, when it was written in like 1677, I mean, you're really talking about two classifications of Baptists at that time. You're talking about like the general Baptists and then what we would call ourselves particular Baptists, right? Mm-hmm. So we lean into the more monergistic views of God in salvation, right? So we lean in on the Calvinism part versus more of the, I don't know if I could say free willish part, a free libertarian will part, but I think General Baptists were more like leaning
definitely
towards,
more of a synergistic understanding of salvation.
Yeah. So I think part of it is that, but then also too, it's like you do need to distinguish yourself in how you look at things, because that's in the 1689. The first the first Baptist confession, actually, it's very broad a little bit, I guess you could say. It's not so much definitive as the second London. So the first London is a little bit more kind of just putting your feet into the water, saying this is what we believe. The second London is actually like going in deeper and kind of like parsing those things out a little bit more and giving more explanation.
Yeah.
Without necessarily going like too deep into like other stuff. Like, I think a lot of people too, like, want to classify, you know, well, how do I look at this from this angle or this angle, in a certain aspect of, you know, the faith. And sometimes it's a little bit silent on that.
Yeah.
Where that's what I would say. That's where scripture comes into play. Like, really the confession is there to basically join you in unity. What we're agreeing to, scripture is telling us, and how we're kind of living that out. But yeah, it's, I mean, the confessions are interesting. 'Cause I look at some things in like the Westminster too, that it's like, oh, that's actually like a really good explanation of that.
Yeah, for sure.
The Westminster goes deep into stuff.
Yeah.
On some levels. Right.
Yep.
And the 1689 doesn't necessarily do that. But I'm wondering as well, too, sometimes those confessions are a product of their time and where they're at. Mm-hmm. And I know, like, right when, you know, the first and second London Baptist Confessions of Faith were penned and edited and created, like, you had a very much state government that was coming down hard. Sure. That was looking to enforce. Were they still Roman Catholic at that time, or that they already switched to Anglican? I think they were still semi Roman Catholic and figuring out the whole Anglican thing.
And I think James Renahan wrote a two volume series of kind of his commentary through the first and the second London that he released. I think the first one was released a little bit ago. The second one just came out last year, I believe. So listeners, if you want to dive more into the first London Confession and second London that Jack and I subscribe to, go pick up James Renahan's books on those, because they're solid. They're thick, but they're solid.
Yeah. It's just it's an interesting, I know he does more of the exposition of the confession, which I think is important. And I think he weaves it's in helpful. Some historical stuff in there too. But I mean, Baptists could not practice their faith like we do here in America. So if you were found in a particular Baptist church, like back in, what would that be? The 17th century.
Yeah,
1600s in kind of London area, like, you would probably be thrown in jail and more likely than not threatened to be like burned at the stake or killed because of what you were doing. And I think, like,
they hated us Baptists.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe it's because, like, we have that perspective.
Yeah.
That we're just like, I at least I do. It's like, I'm not willing to take a certain issue to like heresy grounds all the time or directly go there.
Sure. Sure. Yeah.
I think it's important when we talk about a huge thing that people will talk about, is the differences in men and women and their roles in the church and at home. Right. That's a huge topic.
That's a really big topic. It really is.
And if you land one way or the other on that, either, I don't know what to say. So I would say more of the middle ground is going to be complementarian, egalitarian.
Well, and then
you have the extremes to the left and the right. Right.
Yeah. Well, especially these days where you have full blown egalitarianism on one side, and then on the other side, it's turned into not even complementarianism, but patriarchy. Right. And both are, I think, harsh misunderstandings and diversions from scripture, right? And I know like there's a lot of debate these days on whether we can still use the term complementarian and all that stuff. I honestly don't care. I still use it because I think it's the best way to show that the roles complement each other. Like it's in the title, right? But yeah, I mean, that's one, like even in those there's different opinions, right? Different places that you can land in scripture. And that's just one example. And you're going to have disagreement, right? So I'm not going to say that, a pastor that's egalitarian in his understanding is going to hell or he's not a Christian. I think he's massively wrong in his certain interpretation. But I still believe that I'm going to see, you know, egalitarians in heaven. Right.
Yeah.
Now, they're not going to be egalitarian, anymore, but they'll be there. Right. Sorry. Bad joke. But that being said, mm-hmm. I could not serve with an egalitarian or in an egalitarian church because you got to land somewhere.
Well, that's right? that's going back to like our Baptist distinctions of the liberty of the conscience. Right.
Right.
Like we're not going to drive each other into a situation to where we're violating that liberty of conscience, right?
Right.
I think that's the big thing too. If there's anything, you know, if there's anything that I think that's important as far as like distinctives when we talk about like particular Baptists, I think that's one's a huge one to deal with because I feel like the last 5 years, it's always come back to that. Like you either always have to enforce it this way. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, wait. Are we not operating out of like liberty of the conscience here to a certain degree? And yes, like you can like as a church, I think it's important that church elders make decisions and lead the church well, right? But also there's a certain extent where you can maybe I don't know if pastors, and you could talk about this, pastors force the hand a little bit more often than other times with certain issues. But I really haven't seen that a whole lot. Well, I haven't seen that in my local church because there's a common ground that is being stated, mm-hmm. but then there's also being left to a grace as well, too.
Well, yeah. So, yeah. And I think, you know, my mind automatically goes to my own local church, right? So how we do things in our local church is that, you know, we obviously as a church, as a congregation, we and as elders, we submit to the 1689. That's our confession of faith, right? It's what we submit to. Now we obviously hold that as very high and very important, right? Obviously not to the level of scripture, but it's our it's the thing that we have agreed to hold together, right? Mm-hmm. We don't require subscription to the 1689 to be a member of our church.
Yeah.
It's not something that we require. I know some Reformed Baptist churches might. Mm. That's not something that we... That's not something that we see as valuable, all right? But we do require submission to it.
Yeah.
And what we mean by that is we do expect that even if you don't disagree, even if you don't agree with the 1689, mm-hmm. that you don't speak against it and you don't thwart the elders' leading with it and through it, right?
Yeah.
Now, again, those roads tighten up the higher up the rails you go, right? Yeah. So for the elders, we do require subscription.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because you need unity in what you're teaching.
Well, yeah.
Right?
That makes sense.
So in that, like, I think you see the grace that's given, but also the understanding that especially when it comes to the position of a church, the leadership of the church, you have to land somewhere. And it's okay. That's not a bad thing. Now, are there Baptist churches out there that aren't that don't subscribe to 1689 that are doing great work? Ah, absolutely. Do I think that in order to be a good and biblical church, subscription to the 1689 is required? No, of course not. I think confessionalism helps, and I'm personally convicted that it's one of the best routes to go. But there's plenty of churches that are out there that aren't confessional in their in their understanding, but that are doing fantastic work for the gospel, right? And that I would have no issue want attending there, being a member there, or you know, sending members there if they were to move, right? But it's just this, it's this understanding, Jack, that I've just really come to, that yes, there are secondary issues, and yes, we have grace in those, but as a church, especially when it comes to leading people, you do have to be willing to say, like, no, this is the position that we take, right? Is it different than other Baptist churches? Yeah. Does it mean that it's necessarily better or worse? No, it's not. But it's the position that we hold.
Yeah.
And it's the position that we teach. And it's the position that we practice, right? And that can be on any number of secondary issues, right? And that's not a bad thing. And I think that for a long time, there was just this hesitancy in my mind to do that because of how badly I've seen that go in the past and how dogmatic that I've seen those, right? And again, that's where I've really come to this distinction in my head. And I think the Lord's just been working on me over the past couple of years, is there's a difference between being disagreeable and dogmatic where you shouldn't be versus a humble, gracious understanding that this is what we believe and this is what we practice.
Yeah.
Right. Doesn't mean that we say it's the only way to do it or the only biblical way to do it, but this is what we've agreed to as a church, and this is what we've agreed to as elders to teach. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's different than my personal conviction. Mm. And that's okay, right? Yeah. Like, we have positions in our church that we practice that differ a little bit from how I would personally do it. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, right? I think there can be great unity in that. That's like, yeah, I mean, if you're going to ask my personal opinion, I'm not going to be as I don't even want to say the word dogmatic, but as a word other than dogmatic, as pointed, I guess, right? Like, as pointed in my application as our church, right?
Yeah.
But it's important that our church is, because we need to land somewhere, and we need to know, okay, like, what are we going to unify around to teach and to practice, right? So yeah, it's just something that's been rattling around in my head, and just the importance of seeing the distinction between not being dogmatic, but also it's okay to have a position, on the non-essential, on the non-essential things. So
no, it's so true. But we were going, we've been going through that too, as well, in my Pastors and Leaders Institute group. We've been talking about, you know, where would you say, are your kind of distinctions that you hold to, right? And then also too, like, where would you be open to calling out certain things in error, right? But yeah, I think that, you know, majoring on the majors, that's the important thing.
Yeah.
And I think so often we take secondary and tertiary issues and try to make them into gospel issues. I think that's where the blurring happens.
Yeah.
And we're seeing it constantly with, you know, secondary, tertiary issues becoming gospel issues, and then also just that long gospel line being blurred distinctionally wise. That's what I'm seeing mostly.
Yeah.
Are like the two main things that lead into a lot of other, you know, causes. I think the root of it is the blurring and where are we putting emphasis on, or where are we putting certain things into gospel issues and whatnot.
Yeah.
And then where are we just saying we believe they're in error?
Sure.
That's it.
No, absolutely.
and not making a statement about it or signing onto a declaration, for crying out loud, about it and whatnot. Yeah. But
and being willing to sit in the disagreement graciously.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's a lost art, is learning how to do that. Right. And how to have those discussions and press into the disagreement for the edification of both parties without writing the other person off as a heretic. which is not something that is very well done these days, right? No. So, but yeah, that's what we should do, and that's not a bad thing, right? Even Paul and Barnabas, when they parted, it wasn't because one. They didn't call each other heretics when they parted. They obviously had disagreements, but they parted for the sake of the gospel. That's what scripture says, right? They obviously weren't able to work together anymore due to some sort of, you know, we don't know what it was, right? We can make assumptions, but there was a difference that was a difference enough that Paul and Barnabas they weren't able to do it, right?
Yeah.
So they split. But it was for the sake of the gospel, and neither one called the other one a heretic, right? So I think that's a good example, and I think that's something that we should strive for in our differences, for sure. So,
yeah.
All right, Jack. Well,
good discussion,
Good stuff. We got to land somewhere. It's good to land somewhere in the secondaries, and it's good to land this podcast plane. So, Jack, why don't you start our descent and bring us home, my friend? I'll hit the landing gear and bring us home.
We are 30 seconds out from our final destination.
Happy St. Patrick's Day. Welcome to Ireland.
Yeah. Please drink responsibly.
Drink responsibly.
If there was anything that I could tell people.
If at all, yeah.
If you appreciate Josh and I's focus on unity within local churches and also the place that you're at in a city or in a town, and if you have local churches there and a focus on the local church, you can follow us more. Ask us questions on the sociables. Direct message us, episode ideas, anything that you want us to shoot around, chat about. You can find us there on the Metaverse, the Facebook, if you will, the Instagram, goes well with chocolate and marshmallow, and the always interesting world that is the sociable, formerly known as Twitter X, if you will. You can find us at the tag at Reformatory Pod on all of those sociable outlets. Josh, you can tell our lovely people how they might find us on different outlets and support us further.
That's right. Well, if you want to watch this podcast as well as listen to it, you can head on over to the YouTubes. We have a YouTube channel. Like, comment, subscribe, hit the little bell for notifications, as the kids say. We'd really appreciate it. Like this podcast and rate this podcast on Apple and Spotify. That helps us. Maybe write us a little review. That'd be really cool. You can click on the link in the description of this episode. It's going to take you to a little mom and pop shop, that little tiny pop-up store called Amazon.com. And through Amazon, we sell shirts and merchandise that you can support the Reformatory that way and get some really cool Reformed designs. We're really proud of them. We like them. More on the way. Last but not least, we have a Patreon for $5 a month. All of the goodness of the Patreon could be yours. Jack and I are going from here. We're leaving the tarmac. We're walking across to the airport lounge, and we're going to record some Patreon episodes for our people. And they may or may not all be in Irish accents. We're not sure.
Oh my gosh, not sure
what's happening. I'm going to head over to the Patreon and talk about what band, legendary band, I am going to see in August. Some of the young men from our church. But you're going to have to head over to Patreon to hear about that. So for $5 a month, a $5 holla, you too could become a Patreon supporter. And our pledge to you is, if you do so, that your name shall be hallowed.
Hallowed, sir. Hallowed.
Hallowed through the halls of the podcast. That is our pledge to you. We thank you all for listening, and we will catch you on the next step of the Reformatory.